Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King, locked on trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melodies.
Back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from MassLive.com. I am going to be joined by Anthony Irwin of Locked On Lakers. We're going to preview the Lakers-Celtics game a little bit. We are going to rehash Celtics-Cavaliers a bit. And we're going to talk about Paul George, Jimmy Butler, all that fun stuff. So... yeah, let's just get right into it. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Anthony Irwin from Locked On Lakers.
All right, I'm joined by Jay King of Locked On Lakers and Locked On Celtics.
Close enough.
Yeah, it's been a week. It's been a weird couple weeks. Jay, how are you holding up? You flew out here. You had a nice little delay. How's the weather treating you? I guess out here.
I'm holding up great. I just had some nachos outside, which is very much not something I would do in Boston around this time of year. But they were bad nachos, though. Don't have rock bottom nachos. They're not good.
I mean, the name could kind of give it away, right? there's still snow out there in Boston, is there?
No, it's actually been kind of warm lately. It hasn't been too bad, you know. And then the Celtics Cavaliers game was just fantastic. So it probably would have melted all the snow anyway.
Yeah, that was really exciting. That kind of gives us a segue into talking about this stuff. If you're a Celtics fan, even though Cleveland wasn't playing with Kevin Love or I guess J.R. Smith, they haven't played with in a while anyway. But you know, you're kind of watching that game and how that went down, and you're saying, "Hey, you know, Jimmy Butler, who?"
Yeah, I don't know if you're saying that, but it was definitely a very enjoyable game. And what was most interesting about it, from the perspective of someone who was just watching it and taking it in and enjoying it, was all the best players played really well. Like LeBron had great stretches, Kyrie had some shot making stretches that were just stupid.
Yeah.
Isaiah Thomas came up big down the stretch. Al Horford almost had a triple-double after struggling with his shot for a little while. So it was like all the key players made huge plays. And both teams, I mean, LeBron James came out of it and he was like, man, that was a great game.
Yeah.
It was like, you just lost, man. But that's kind of the game it was, that even the players who lost were like, that was pretty cool.
It reminded me of like those Rocky fights where if you've ever boxed before and you watch a Rocky Balboa movie, you watch like they're just throwing haymakers at each other without really putting their gloves up or anything. You're like, man, one of these shots would send this guy flying to the ground.
Yeah, or like the Friday Night Lights when every single game ended with like an 80-yard touchdown run at the buzzer.
Yeah, which was also funny to me because the buzzer doesn't matter in football.
Yep.
But
had to be at the buzzer.
Yeah, but... It was great to watch that, and I'm looking forward to, you know, that being a series at some point. But Did you look at the game at all as far, you know, as fool's gold, or were you just taking it in purely for the spectacle that it was?
I mean, I don't think it was fool's gold. I thought both teams played pretty well. I thought, obviously, the Cavaliers had some opportunities to, like, obviously, like, Deron Williams had a wide open three to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
The Cavaliers, like, they will shoot better when Kevin Love and J.R. Smith are in their starting lineup. They're a lot more difficult to guard. Andrew Bogut will come, give them another physical force. Like, there's a lot of factors that went into the game. But at the same point, like, those were two really good teams playing well. It wasn't like the Cavaliers had a poor game. Like, LeBron James and Kyrie Irving both had, I thought, you know, pretty good. Like, it wasn't their best games ever, but they both played well, and the Celtics, you know, I thought they really executed down the stretch. The looks for Jay Crowder, the look for Avery Bradley, both really crisp offense. Isaiah Thomas was working his ass off to get into the paint and then kicked it out. So I do think if those two teams do meet in the playoffs, there will be a lot of points scored. Those are not great defenses, although Boston probably played as well defensively against Cleveland as they have in, I don't know, a couple months. So we'll see. I don't take it as like, ooh, Celtics could knock off Cleveland now, but it was a fun game. I mean,
yeah.
I don't take anything else from it other than that it was a really well-played game. And was it February or March? I guess it was March 1st, right?
Yeah, I guess it was, yeah. Yeah, the months have kind of flown by.
I never know the dates. During the NBA season, I don't know what day it is. I don't know the date. I just look at my calendar and see if the Celtics have a game or practice, and that's how I roll.
Tanya Ganguly out here on the Lakers beat actually wrote a really interesting article.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, about how little these guys know where they are and what day it is and stuff. So I totally understand the doldrums there.
Actually, when I got to the airport today, they asked me where I was going. I was checking in, and I was like, I'm not sure. I think L.A., maybe L.A., Phoenix, somewhere over there.
Yeah, your name, sir? I did think, you know, because Avery Bradley has been out for a good portion of this year, and it was good to see him kind of come back and assume that role of, if it comes down to a final possession and you need somebody to just dog a ball handler, the defense he played on the final possession of Kyrie Irving shows exactly why, you know, Danny Ainge might have been a little hesitant to include him in a deal, because there's no guarantee you're getting that defense back from either Paul George or Jimmy Butler from a role player like that, right? You're going to get a great star, but losing that from a role player, being able to just step up and make that kind of defensive play is something that it'd be tough for the Celtics to replace.
Yeah, especially when you're going to have to go through Kyle Lowry, Kyrie Irving, John Wall. Like, there are a lot of really good point guards in the NBA and in the Eastern Conference. Like, those top four teams, they all have really good point guards, and there are going to be possessions where you're going to need to hound someone. So that was just a really, really impressive reminder from Avery Bradley. I mean, he was out for a month.
Yeah.
It was just his second game. He's still on a minutes restriction. That last possession was just incredible. His fast switch muscles are ridiculous. His reflex is just ridiculous. I'm not sure there's a better point guard on ball defender than him. Like just one on one, you know the guy's going to make a move. I'm not sure there's anyone better than Avery Bradley to try to stay in front of somebody.
Well, yeah, sure. Now that Marcelo Huertas has been waived by the Houston Rockets.
Exactly. I figured that into my thought process.
I did want to touch on this. So how did you feel about how the trade deadline went, right? That kind of brings us back to Laker talk a little bit. But how did you feel like the trade deadline went? Did you feel, well, for me as a Laker fan, I felt like if the Celtics made a move for Paul George, there goes the chances of the Lakers landing Paul George. So I was kind of, I actually cheered pretty openly for, you know, when that trade deadline went, you know, came and passed. How did you feel about Danny Ainge standing pat there?
I think it's two things. One, they don't want to gut their roster. Like, you don't want to go out and spend so much to get Jimmy Butler or Paul George that you don't really take a tangible step forward, and you lose the pick, and you lose like Marcus Smart, you lose Jay Crowder, and all of a sudden, like, you don't get much better, and you lose the pick on top of it. So I think that's part of it. I do think they also have a feeling in their organization, like, nobody can trump what the Celtics can offer. Like, if they put all their chips on the table, they have more, I think, than anybody can offer. Like, it's just, they have so much draft equity. They have quality young players. They have Crowder, who's on an awesome contract if a team wants that. I'm not. Do you think the Lakers could compete with that offer if the Celtics like threw that one of those picks on the table and like Jaylen Brown or something else? Like,
I think when it comes to the picks, there's no argument to be made, right? The Celtics have done an incredible job of acquiring enough picks to be able to just say, hey, if you want the ultimate flexibility, and the one thing that's kind of going to hurt them is losing Amir Johnson's contract, having the free agent or having the expiring deal at the trade deadline was a nice chip to be able to offer a team. So if they say if the Celtics went to the Pacers and said, hey, you could completely clear your books, we'll give you a bunch of expiring money, we'll give you a whole bunch of picks, and then you guys get to build basically from scratch, then that's something that I think the nobody else could offer. But in terms of like the prospects that both teams have, I think there's at least an argument to be made either way, right? Like if the Celtics can say, hey, we have Jaylen Brown, or who do you consider the Celtics' best prospect?
I think Jaylen Brown is long term their best prospect. If you look at it from like players that aren't established yet, obviously Isaiah Thomas is nearly an MVP candidate, and like he's their best player. I don't think Jaylen Brown will ever be as good as Isaiah Thomas is this year. But as far as long term prospects go, I think it's between Smart and Brown, and I would give the edge to Brown because of how dynamic he is, and I think he has more offensive upside than Marcus Smart, even though Marcus Smart is a beast. He just hasn't shown the finishing and shooting progress you'd want from him. So I think it's pretty clearly Jaylen Brown, although, I mean, some teams might want Jay Crowder in his contract because it's like, super contract.
It's basement.
But, yeah, exactly. I would say probably Brown.
Yeah, because I think in that sense, you know, I would probably match up Brown and Russell, and I'd probably match up Marcus Smart and Julius Randle, and then, you know, Brandon Ingram has been up and down this year, so you don't necessarily know what you're getting with him. But in terms of the actual prospects, in terms of players, I think there's at least a conversation to be had. But yeah, in terms of the picks that the Celtics can offer, if they really want to throw down a bunch of picks, nobody can match that. Now,
what's the feeling in LA about Ingram right now?
Honestly, it can be summed up by that sigh. but I think with Ingram, it's a matter of, he's shown flashes so often that you say, holy crap, what this guy can do. Like, he had a dunk the other night against Cody Zeller at the rim where he was fully extended and you saw how long the arms were, where he was able to take off from, and poor Cody couldn't even, you know, he had no idea what really hit him. But then you also, you know, you look at his shooting numbers and that's not a great sign. But to take it even a step further, and this just kind of goes, like, it's with every good attribute, there's a downside to it. And every bad attribute, you can kind of say, well, but he also has this going for him. His defense for a rookie has been incredible. And you're looking at the same thing with Jaylen Brown, right? I think Jaylen Brown and Brandon Ingram are probably pretty comparable in terms of the seasons they've had, just the up and down nature. This entire draft this rookie class hasn't been very good.
It was a bad draft.
It was not good, especially now with, you know, Ben Simmons having missed his entire rookie year. It's kind of, I'd like to see the NBA roll the Rookie of the Year trophy on over to next year and give give that guy two
rookie of the year trophies to next year.
Yeah, just give him two. See what happens there. But yeah,
Markelle Fultz and Lonzo Ball both win rookie of the year
for the Lakers and Celtics, right? Like there's a that'd be a really fun way to kick off that rival.
Yep, there you go.
but yeah, I think with Ingram, he's shown a ton, but then there's always that disclaimer of, but can we see it consistently? And these next 21 games for him are going to be pretty telling as far as what we think his season might turn out to be, you know, and how we can perceive him moving forward. He's just so skinny.
I know. But he does. He has so much tantalized potential, and he shows flashes where it's like, ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's why everyone was so high on him. Yeah. And I think it's kind of the same with Jaylen Brown. Like Jaylen Brown against Cleveland, at the end of the first quarter, he could have held on for the last shot and instead ran straight into a defender and got called for a charge with like 10 seconds left on the clock. Brad Stevens literally like punched his hand. And then third quarter, it was like same scenario, and he did it again.
Yep.
And then it's like fourth quarter, he catches an alley-oop, he hits a three, he's like clapping his hands in LeBron's face, like D-ing him up, and it's like, what the hell? Like rookie years are so up and down. But I do think that Jaylen Brown he's a keeper. He's gonna be at least pretty good. Like he is a super athlete. He is electric in the post. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he was going to be such a good low post player. And from everything everyone says about him, he just works his balls off.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny, like you described Ingram. You know, he's long enough where when he's playing at his absolute best, he'll actually call for the ball when he has a mouse in the house. And that's when you're saying, all right, this kid has it going. And then when he puts, you know, somebody in the post and shoots straight over the player, you're saying, all right, that's something to build off of offensively. But then he'll go the very next game and he'll shoot, you know, 1 for 8, airball a wide open corner three. And you'll just say, what happened to that kid? So it's a fun one. All right. So I've heard a lot of talk about the Celtics. Part of their reasoning here with not making a move for Butler or George at the deadline was, look, LeBron's really good, and there's a chance that even if we acquire this guy, we might have to, you know, carve out a good portion of our assets moving forward, and we still might not be able to beat LeBron. I actually think that parallels something that the Lakers did back when Jordan was in his prime, where Dr. Jerry Buss kind of said, well, you know, we'll field a fun team or whatever, but we aren't going to go for broke because there's no beating this guy while he's playing the way he is.
Yeah, it's probably something like that. Like as I was saying earlier, if you go out and you take away, if you trade Crowder, Smart, a pick for Butler, there's a chance you don't get that much better right away. The Cavaliers obviously are a step above, and if you don't reach the Cavaliers, if you don't give yourself at least a really good chance or a good chance of knocking off the Cavaliers, and you waste those picks, which could turn into, you know, Markelle Fultz and DeAndre Ayton,
mm-hmm.
then you've really done your organization a disservice by even though you go out and get this great player, it's like are you really doing what's best for trying to win a championship at some point? And LeBron is just like, he looms over everything. And now the Warriors, they loom over everything too. And obviously Kevin Durant got hurt, and I think that injury showed why people do load up, why teams like the Raptors go out and get Serge Ibaka and PJ Tucker, because really, you never know.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going to happen. One injury, and now all of a sudden this team that looks completely unbeatable is vulnerable. And like, that's why people load up. The Celtics obviously chose not to load up, and they still have all their chips. I do think that they'll be able to go after Butler and or George at a later date. Now they'll have free agent money to go after Gordon Hayward or Blake Griffin. Like, they at some point they're going to need to make the decisions, because Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, and Isaiah Thomas will all be up for new contracts at the end of next season, and they are all going to get very large raises. So they won't have this flexibility forever, and they can't keep like punting it down the road and chasing it down to the like the next deadline or the next draft or whatever. Like, at some point they're going to either cash in those chips or just draft guys and develop Markelle Fultz or whoever else and see what happens. But I mean, I don't know. There's just a lot going on, a lot of different paths, and I don't think there's a bad path for them, but they're either going to be good or great, and there are going to be a lot of really tough decisions for them in the meantime.
What's kind of interesting to me is that I think the path that could turn out the worst is if they try to win right now, right? Or if they, you know, I'm not too positive, I might be biased because it is the Celtics, and, you know, I mean, I'm sure if you were looking at the Lakers assets, you probably have a lower opinion of the Lakers assets than most, because you're coming from the Celtics side of this. But I kind of look at Al Horford and I look at Isaiah Thomas, and I think they're good players. I think they're what they've done so far this year for Boston has been great. The Isaiah Thomas story is one of the better stories that we've seen in the NBA in recent years, where he's the 60th pick and now he's an MVP candidate. But I also don't want to be the team that, you know, has two max slots devoted to Al Horford and Isaiah Thomas, because I don't know how those guys are going to age. Is that a fair assessment? I mean, when I say that, and, you know, either you or anybody else out there in Boston quote RTs it, my mentions just become a literal dumpster fire.
I think that's totally fair. And I think there is validity to wondering what Horford's contract will be like, you know, 2-3 years from now when he's on the back end of it and has maybe stopped playing so well and his skills have diminished a bit. And then with Isaiah Thomas is a weird case, because if you just looked at it and he was a normal player, right, and he's averaging 30 points per game and he's 27 years old and he doesn't turn the ball over, like, he's super efficient as a scorer. He is one of the top 3 to 5 offensive players in the league this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you look at that and you'd be like, hell yeah, you would max that guy out. And then, but Isaiah Thomas, because he's 5'9", there's a question, will he age well? And it's weird because there aren't really comparables. Like you think about it and it's like, who else is a comparable out there? Like, Allen Iverson was a kind of similar player. Well, Allen Iverson didn't really give a fuck about basketball. Like, the fault with Allen Iverson and the reason he didn't age well wasn't necessarily because he was small and skinny. It was because I don't think he put in the time and energy to his body and to aging well that a lot of other guys did. Now, I do think Isaiah Thomas does that. So I really don't know. Will he age well? Probably. I mean, if you do max him out and he's going to be, what, 28 years old when he hits free agency, then you get him through 32, 33, which should be the back end of his prime, assuming he ages like a normal player. But there always is that fear, like, okay, if he's 5'9", if he slows down just a little bit, and if anything happens to diminish his speed, his
everything,
elusiveness, and everything, like, then what do you have left? Now you have a guy who's a defensive liability because of his height and can't do everything at such an elite level that he's that big a difference maker anymore. So he's a completely unique case, and I mean I wouldn't feel fully comfortable with him, but I also wouldn't be surprised if he has like still another level to get to, because every time you think, like, okay, Isaiah Thomas has reached his peak, he just kind of steps up and does something else. So
he's going to show up to camp and be like 6'4" one day. I fooled you guys.
6'4", 230.
Yeah, just joked. I do think so. The reason I think he'll age fine, I think offensively, because he can shoot as well as he does. Like, that's the big thing with Iverson, and that's the actual knock that I think I've always had with him, is that Iverson always thought he was going to be this uber athlete. And he, I mean, for a good portion of his career, he obviously was an uber athlete. But then when that athleticism started to slip, he never really devoted his time to, all right, I need to be able to shoot from the outside. I need to be able to take advantage of defenders without just, you know, being laterally quicker than everybody. And I think with Thomas, because he can step out and he can hit from where he can, that's going to help him age offensively. Just the defensive stuff is what kind of scares me, because I don't think you can have a max player who is legitimately bad defensively and have a chance to compete like the Celtics would like to be able to compete moving forward, right? And that's the concern with like any of the Lakers guys, is that, you know, and even if they get like Alonzo Ball, you're going to have probably the worst offensive backcourt ever next year, if it's D'Angelo Russell and Lonzo Ball. it's not going to be a pretty picture defensively, and that's where I
kind of want that to happen now.
Oh, I've thought about it a lot. The Lakers will have to average like 130 points to compete with people.
But hey, they might.
But hey, I mean, hey, if you talk to LeVar Ball, he thinks Steph Curry doesn't have anything on his son. So that's what you got going on there. All right, let's talk a little bit about the game. By the time everybody's listening to this tonight, the Lakers play the Celtics at 7:30 at Staples Center. I mean, my wife and I were trying to make plans to, you know, hey, do we want to go to the game? Do we want to go somewhere and watch the game? Do we want to have friends over for the game? And my response was always like, I think the Lakers are going they're going to get their ass kicked.
No, honey, let's stay home.
Yeah, let's not show our face in public for this one. But it's kind of an interesting matchup with them. And the Lakers, when their kids come to play, they actually do pretty well against, you know, playoff teams. They kind of get up and get ready for the game. If I were to tell you going into tomorrow's game that the Celtics and Lakers were close within the last couple minutes, would you be shocked?
No, the Celtics play everyone close. That's the dirty secret about this Celtics season, is they don't blow anyone out. And because of that, their net rating is lower than it was at this point last season when they ended up finishing with 48 wins last year. I think they're on pace for 52 or 53 now. Mm-hmm. But they've done that by squeaking out a ton of close games because Isaiah Thomas goes nuts in the fourth quarter, and their offense has been fantastic in the fourth quarter, and they've done just barely enough to get away with their bad defense and rebounding. And that's just been their cycle this year. Like, they're a great, great, great fourth quarter execution team, but everybody plays them close. So I would be really shocked, actually. Not shocked. I wouldn't be shocked if they blow out the Lakers, but I expect every game the Celtics play to be close this season.
That's a good way to put it. And now everybody listening to this has a reason to watch the game, so that's also good.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here for the TV ratings.
I would say, would you like to try to put some kind of avatar bet on this one, or are you gonna?
I don't think I've changed my avatar in like a few years.
I don't think.
What am I blocking somebody?
What's that? Oh, I don't know.
I think I'm blocking somebody. It was like the one block of my career.
Well,
some dude was going up for a dunk, actually, and I went up and swatted him. But I swatted him like 6 feet before he got to the rim, but I still swatted him.
Strips counts as blocks sometimes.
Yeah.
if there was a picture of me doing anything athletic, I don't think I would change my avatar for a few years either. So, all right, man. Well, this was a lot of fun. Best of luck tomorrow. If you had to choose between this is the last question I have for you before we get out of here. If you had to choose between Paul George and Jimmy Butler at, say, the NBA draft, if the Celtics were going to trade for one or the other, which way would you prefer they go?
So that's an interesting question. And I've thought about this. I think Jimmy Butler right now is a better player. Like, I don't think it. I don't think you can look at the two seasons that they've had and say that Paul George has had a better season. Like, Jimmy Butler right now is a better basketball player. I do think that Paul George, because he's a better catch-and-shoot shooter, because he's 6'10 and long, though that might fit better next to Isaiah Thomas than somebody like Jimmy Butler, who needs a ball in his hands, who's not a great three-point shooter. So Paul George might fit better on the Celtics. But, I mean, really, like, if you get Paul George or Jimmy Butler, those guys are really damn good basketball players.
Yep.
If you have a choice between one of those two guys, like, you're in a pretty damn good place. Who would you take?
I think I prefer Paul George. I like the length. And, again, like, the Lakers might have a backcourt of Lonzo Ball and D'Angelo Russell. Like, you need whatever defense you can possibly get. And I think Paul George is going to age a little bit better being a little taller.
Although Jimmy Butler has added so much to his game every year.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's like, you know, if you're drafting a fantasy team of all players in the history of the NBA, you don't feel terrible drafting second, right? So it's like if you're saying, all right, I think I'd rather have Paul George, and you wind up with Jimmy Butler, it's not like you go home and you kick the dining room table. I feel pretty good.
You're going to be okay with it either way.
Yeah, I'd be all right with it. My dream scenario, to be completely honest, and this will go over really well out there in Boston, was that the Celtics would trade a whole bunch of their assets for Paul George, and then he would decide to come to the Lakers anyway. And I decided that, you know, and Harrison and I decided that if that happened, he would get a statue upon arrival. Like, they would start working on it as soon as he got to Los Angeles, but it looks like that's not how it's going to turn out.
Yeah, I mean, the Celtics, I think they'd have to be confident that they could, given a year, if they trade for him this summer, that given a year with him, they could sell him on, okay, your teammates are really good, your coach is really good, the culture is really good, and if you want to go to LA, like, okay, whatever, you can do that, but just know a lot of these other things won't be the same.
Yeah. You'll probably look like an idiot doing so.
Although, I mean, I can never blame someone for making a free agent choice based on their own priorities.
Mm-hmm.
Like Kevin Durant wanted to play with a great team. Awesome. Cool. Whatever. Like, another guy wants to go get money. All right, cool.
Yeah.
Like, when I choose my job, I want to be able to decide what I want. So I never fault guys. If you want to go to LA and be closer to home, although there have been a lot of guys I feel like that have postured like that, and then it never really came to fruition.
Well, right? I think it's a leverage play by his agent, right? So if Paul George winds up winning, you know, making an all-NBA team this year or next year, he's in line for that $40 million super deal. And his agent, his job is to do whatever is his client wants him to do. And if his client is saying, hey, get me that $40 million a year contract, then that's what his agent is going to do. And like, chapter one in gaining leverage in the NBA is find a way to sneak the Lakers into the conversation, because that tends to get people to listen. And then it's even easier if your client happens to be from the greater LA area, which Paul George is. He very nearly went to my alma mater, Cal State Fullerton. If he does come to the Lakers, I'd like to have a conversation with him about that decision. That he did.
Cal State Fullerton. He could have been Cal State Fullerton's finest, man.
He could have followed in the great footsteps of Bruce Bowen.
Ooh.
How could you pass that up? No, but
that is tough to pass up.
But yeah, I think this is his agent doing everything he possibly can to, you know, if George wants to make all that money in Indiana, then he's going to get him all that money in Indiana. If George wants to be closer to home, then he'll maybe get him closer to home. But as of right now, we're still, you know, more than a year away from this decision having to be made as a free agent. It's just a whole bunch of posturing. And you know how that goes. I mean, this is just how they do this.
Yep. It's crazy how long before free agency things start to get out of control.
Yeah.
Like it's a year and a half before he hits free agency, and it's already like, well, he wants to stay in Indiana, but only if they can win. You better load up, Larry Bird. It's like, like he wants to go to L.A. Denver, don't even think about coming in with an offer. It's like,
well, that's what
it really is pretty funny.
That's what Boogie's agent did with New Orleans. Even they told New Orleans, do not trade for Boogie because he's going to be angry that you cost him, you know, upwards of $50 million by trading for him. And then, you know,
great foot to start off on there.
Yeah, that's how all relations start. I mean, when David talked to us in Las Vegas, right, all our agents basically said, don't take our independent contractors away. No. All right, Jay, well, this was a lot of fun. Enjoy the game tomorrow. Enjoy the warmer weather. This is actually the warmest it's been out here in about a month. We've been getting hammered with rain, the spoiled brats that we are.
Screw you.
Enjoy. Go get some better nachos, and we'll talk over the summer or something.
All right, terrific. If you go to the game, let me know.
Absolutely. All right, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, see you then. Yeah, Jay King and John Corrales, Locked On Celtics.